Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
I want to start off this week's reality check with some humor, courtesy of one Susan Collins, who is the Boston Federal Reserve president. She said that if you take out food, energy, and shelter, if you don't look at those three things, inflation is pretty much back to growing around 2% levels. So nothing to worry about. We're doing great. Battle with inflation's over. So let me get this straight. A woman who is part of the cabal that determines the level of base money supply, dictates short-term interest rates and the price of money, and is therefore extremely influential on prices and the living standards of Americans, thinks that if you can live like a cave person, can you say caveman anymore? You have to be politically correct. Okay. If you live like a cave individual, you will find, you know, if you can find a nice hole in the rocks for shelter, and you're pretty good at being a hunter-gatherer, so you don't have to buy food, and you don't use any energy, there's no lights, no heat, and maybe you could ride your bike to work, then inflation isn't really an issue for you any longer. However, what she fails to realize is that the cost of living ex energy and ex shelter and ex food is rising from a price level that has already severely injured the middle class. And the cost of living, including those things that non-cavemen are using, is rising faster and further away from the Fed's asinine 2% target level. However, despite all this, Susan Collins thinks the Fed needs to lower the cost of money to ensure that the pace of inflation does not fall. Now, of course, the bond market gets the joke and has sent rates rising across the yield curve. In fact, the 2-year note is up 75 basis points, and the 10-year note yield is up 80 basis points after the day Jerome Powell thought the economy needed lower rates and that it's a good idea to really get on the ball with a Fed funds rate and lower it by panicking into a 50 basis point move. Well, right on cue, mortgage rates responded too. And they have soared by 90 basis points since September 17th. It isn't much of a mystery then why October housing starts dropped by 3.1% when the estimate was for a decline of just 1.5%, and why building permits dipped by 0.6% when Wall Street's estimate was for a gain of 0.7%. The housing market remains broken and frozen in a very brittle condition and ready to crack. Clients of Pinto Portfolio Strategies know I've made a lot of trading moves post the election of Donald Trump and the Republican sweep of Congress, both the Senate and the House. But please do not think I've suddenly become a permabull on the long-term prospects for the U.S. economy and the market. The election of DJT in no way negates or annuls the existence of the credit, real estate, and equity bubbles. They are still there, and their reconciliation is inevitable and will be extremely chaotic and recessionary and depressionary for the economy when they pop. Nevertheless, in the short term, the changes in DC have led to at least the belief, for now, that both growth and inflation will be rising next year and beyond. And I am sympathetic to that view for now. On the growth front, lower personal and corporate taxes and reduced regulations are very stimulative. The prospect of no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime, no taxes on Social Security will be a huge boost for consumers. Trump also wants to cap interest rates on credit card debt. He wants to allow for the deduction of auto loan interest. He wants to lift the cap on state and local taxes and increase the child tax credit. Extending the Trump Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2018 would keep corporate taxes at 21%. However, Trump would like to see this rate drop to 15%. Again, All this is very stimulative to growth, but will lead to a huge jump in the deficit next year. Offsetting some of these growth measures will be the very likely imposition of 60% tariffs on imports from China. At least there's a credible threat that's what he wants to do, which could lead to a trade war. The deportation of millions of illegal immigrants would reduce the labor force, which is half of the input to GDP growth. Most importantly, rising interest rates are an immediate impediment to growth on this highly indebted nation. I'll have more to say on those metrics on debt in a bit. Whereas the tax cuts and deregulation measures will not become law until at least Q1 of next year at the earliest, the deportations and tariffs can happen much sooner. On the inflation front, significant banking deregulations should spur increased lending, which is inflationary as it increases the broader money supply. And after all, Trump is the self-avowed king of debt and lover of a weaker dollar. That must be accretive to inflation. But the most important boost to inflation will come from the Fed. Mr. Powell and his merry band of money printers have already dropped the Fed funds rate by 75 basis points and have laid the groundwork for about another 100 basis points of rate cuts between now and the end of next year. But this is nothing compared to what is coming. Due to the massive increase in deficits coming in the next few years, the Fed will be forced to monetize a gargantuan amount of both existing and new Treasury bond issuance, and then put all of those trillions in new debt in cold storage on its balance sheet. The ideal will be to take the debt out of the realm of the public price discovery in order to make the Treasury appear solvent. In other words, we will have deeply negative real interest rates for a very long time. Once again, this will be the main driver behind inflation. So here's some metrics that you should be aware of heading into this. Total non-financial debt has now soared to a record $75.3 trillion as of Q2 2024. So it's higher than that now. That's 260% of GDP. We are now paying 20% of all federal revenue on interest payments alone. The current average interest rate on U.S. debt is about 3.3%. However, this amount is rising rapidly because there is no interest rate across the entire yield curve that is currently that low. And we're paying this low amount because the Treasury had floated debt that was, 1 to 3 years when rates were much lower. The yield curve now ranges from 4.25% to 4.6%. All things staying equal, we will soon be paying 30% of all revenue on interest payments alone. Of course, the debt is soaring along with interest rates, so the debt-to-revenue ratio will become much worse. But the hope is that the GDP growth and revenue will both grow faster than the debt. That's always the hope. If you're betting on that to happen, I have some swampland in the metaverse to sell you. The national debt is 720% of revenue, and the deficit is 44% of all revenue. Try getting a loan from a bank with those types of metrics. Even most loan sharks would take a hard pass on you. But it's not just the government that is that has a debt as an issue. U.S. household debt is over $20 trillion, record high. Business debt, $22 trillion. Shadow banks have gorged on debt too. For example, private credit has exploded tenfold since the global financial crisis to $2 trillion. These are loans to non-public businesses that can't get a loan from an FDIC-insured bank, and there's no real liquid secondary market for this debt. It's private. It's not public. When the poop hits the bed, you will see devastation in private credit. Panic in that sector. That's going to happen when the recession comes because they're going to have all this debt. No one's going to know what it's worth. You can't unload it, and nobody wants to take it off your hands. And if they did, if you could find a buyer, it would be pennies on the dollar. Illiquid and opaque. Now, what else would you expect when the cost to borrow money has been warped into negative real terms and below 1% for like 11 of the past 14 years? And our central counterfeiters want it to go lower. The welcomed and decisive election result is consequential to our investment strategy because it further delays the recession. The fiscal and monetary policies under Harris would have been awful in that the increased debt would have done little to encourage capital creation and increase productivity. The debt that Harris wanted to float was just giveaways to the public. One-time giveaways to the public to buy a house, for example. That doesn't increase productivity. In other words, a Harris presidency could have been much more stagflationary, unlike cutting taxes permanently, which encourages business to take chances. But the danger is still prevalent. In fact, the gambling on Wall Street should only intensify. Target date funds, buy and hold indexing, and even AI are pushing more and more funds into just a handful of holdings, a handful of stocks. Wall Street has become a concentrated casino that is loaded and primed for chaos. Spiking rates are the most salient danger to derail the whole game. The inflation, deflation, and economic cycle model will let us know when the recession and or liquidity crises is nearby. Until then, we continue to cautiously ride this bull market higher.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.